Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Soccer matters.
To Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate de gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Oribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, lots going on here during the holiday season. Again, a big Merry Christmas to everybody. Hope you're enjoying the Christmas music here tonight on the show. We got to get into that festive, positive place, right? All right, quick word here for FM Kitchen and Bar. Two locations in Houston, one by Montrose and Westheimer. The other one is north of Washington Avenue on Shepherd. Big open area outside. Get over there. Best burger in town, chicken sandwiches, all kinds of good healthy options as well. Plus great craft cocktails. It's FM Kitchen and Bar. Two locations again, Montrose and Westheimer, and then north of Shepherd or north of Washington on Shepherd. The great outdoor area, all kinds of monitors outside and inside. Get over there, say hello to Jason. Next guest, and I'm going to pronounce his name correctly, Jorge Iturralde of ClubDeportes.com. You can follow him at Club Deportes and at Jorge Iturralde, Iturralde. Jorge, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Hi, Glenn. No, thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
All right. So Jorge covers extensively Austin FC in the Austin area, just to let you all know out there who are listening in tonight. So how about just, you know, your first year take on the club, both on and off the field, Jorge?
Well, we had a very bad year on the field. We had many things, up and downs, but generally we ended with 21 losses. So we can't talk anything positive about the end. Well, you know, we can say we were better than Houston Dynamo. That's the only thing we can say. But other than that, I think the environment, I mean, the stadium we have, it's a very awesome stadium. The people, the supporter groups, I think this year for most of the people, most of the fans, they didn't really care about the results at the end. Well, I mean, we would love to be on the playoffs, but at the end, the first year, I think, was fun for everybody, was something that I've been living here in Austin for 25 years, something that I never thought it was going to happen, you know. First of all, with the MLS team, and then with qualifying games for the World Cup, friendly with the women. I mean, it was like a really, really good year soccer-wise in general for the city of Austin.
And by the way, Austin FC, number one in merchandising in the league and sold out all their games, to Jorge's point. So it was a fantastic, spectacular year off the field. And the organization deserves a tremendous amount of credit for that. Now, on the sporting side of it, you mentioned 21 losses. They were 9-4-21, 12th in the West, one position ahead of the Houston Dynamo. How much pressure now comes here in year two? How much rope is there for this team? Was this the year that Josh Wolf got an opportunity in the club to get their feet wet? Okay, we write that off. Where does it have to go here in year two?
Well, honestly, it's I don't know. I mean, in a regular soccer world, a coach with 21 losses, he wouldn't get a second chance. I mean, it's too much to lose in one season. But on this first year, and then we believe, and I believe personally, that there is a connection between Josh Wolf, the whole organization, Claudio Reyna. They played together in World Cup, and also I believe they're friends, and the ownership. I think the reason why Josh Wolf is there and why he's going to get a second chance is because more than what happened on the field, it's more the friendship they have. What pressure they will have for 2022, I don't know, because we didn't see any kind of anger from the top with the results. I mean, if you have one season and you heard rumors or something that Wolf was going to be out, or Wolf it's on the edge, or he will be in trouble if another lose or something. Nothing like that happened the whole year. So I want to believe if there is one positive, one win, he's going to give him a credit for another three, whatever it happens on the other field. That's what happened on this season. I mean, he won one, he lost three. He won one, he lost four. He won one, he lost five. So I want to believe that this pressure is going to, if he's going to be a pressure, it's going to be around half of the season, if the results are the same as we had in 2021.
Talking to Jorge Torralde of ClubDeportes.com. You can follow it at ClubDeportes. And you can also go to Jorge at ClubDeportes.com. Okay, so let's just talk about a couple of things, because here in Houston, we saw the inability to sustain the gift of a championship team in 2006 and 2007. It was mismanaged. A lot of things really in the last 10 years have really gone off the boil, per se. So year two is going to be very, very important. And I, without a doubt, believe Austin ownership, Anthony Precourt and everybody else, they're like, look, we can't have another year like that. We don't want to test our fan base when it comes to winning and losing. They're having such a great time. They're buying merchandise. They're buying tickets. They're the story in MLS outside of the competitive nature of the game. So I got to think there's real pressure here in year two. And Josh Wolf has obviously probably learned some things, Jorge.
They were saying, people on the social media, they were saying, okay, let's wait five games to see if we, because there were some hashtags during the 2021 season, like asking for Wolf out. But as I'm saying,
Can I stop you right there, though? Is that a bad thing? That's not a bad thing. Look, I personally like Josh Wolf. I think he's talented. I think he's got a shot at making it happen. I loved him as a player. He's always been very good to me. That aside, he's under pressure. He's got a job to do. And I think that the fact that in year one, you did get some fans saying, you know what, Wolf out, whatever, whether it had traction behind it or not, it certainly did result-wise, but that's healthy to me. I know that's healthy. See, we don't get that down here in Houston much.
Yeah, well, you see, on the media side, I think Club Deportes has been very hard to Josh Wolf and generally to the team, because we criticize a lot what happened in each game. As you say, Josh Wolf, I think it's a wonderful person. I think he's a great family dad, and everything. But talking about soccer, I think Club Deportes has been very hard with him. I asked him personally. I said, in a media conference, I said, Josh, there are a bunch of people asking for you to be fired on social media. What do you think? What are your thoughts? Everything that you can hear from somebody saying, okay, we're going to be working. We lost, but we need to work hard. We lost, but it was a mistake here. It was a mistake there. He doesn't really follow social media. That's what he told me, number one. And number two, I don't think he pays attention on social media. Now, did someone on the organization, it's close to the social media to see what's happening? They have to. I mean, it is It is, social media is very important.
They follow social media. It's too important these days. Decisions are made off social media, sometimes wrongly, but they're made off it. And look, I think if a coach fires back and gets a little bit emotional, what's wrong with that? They're allowed to have that also. If you ask a question that maybe gets under their skin about results and they're frustrated guys, I'm okay with that. They're allowed to be frustrated as long as the relationship between a journalist and a coach remains respectful. I think people are allowed to have emotion sometimes.
Definitely, because we, as a journalist, we go game by game. I mean, it's you have a game, but it's now exactly what's going to happen in 2022. We are starting from zero. So it's like we're going to start from game one, game two. We nothing, no regrets from the past. But obviously, we know what the performance of the team on 2021. And we're going to be watching what this team, because basically, Glenn, I don't see how Austin FC is going to get a bomb, a good player, somebody who will make a difference. I think we're going to keep the same guys. We're going to have one from here, from there. But the team is going to be the base. It's going to be the same one. And we have to see how the same team from 2021 or the base is going to do on 2022.
Well, where are the needs? I mean, to me, I would defensively, I'd go there. There are needs for a center back. There's needs to be a better team in transition defending. Don't you think that Sebastian Driussi and Cecilio Dominguez, now that they've gotten a season under them, they're going to come in with a full preseason next year in the case of Driussi? And they can lead. Do you feel comfortable with the attack? What do you want to see improved?
Well, I think we have a good team, but Cecilio Dominguez is the same Cecilio Dominguez that played in America and Independiente. He's like that. He plays one game good, one game he's not going to do nothing. And so we need to basically sit and wait for him to do something. Driussi, we have nothing to say about him. He's a good leader. He's the one who takes the responsibility to attack, right? To put the team on his shoulders. Now we have a good team with Diego Fagundes, with Nick Lima. Pochettino, it was our big. We expect a lot of about him on the beginning of the season. I think he didn't accomplish what we were expecting, but he's there. I mean, Rodney Redes. We haven't seen anything. He's the story guy, but we haven't seen anything from him. Alex Ring, I think he's going to be – I don't know why they want to take him as the captain, because they say they may change him. But, you know, the team we have, Glenn, honestly, we can compete. We can compete on MLS, and we can be on playoffs. What we need on the center back is what you said, but we still have two players – like Julio Cascante and Romagna, that they can get together and play good. The only thing, all the changes, because that's another thing that Josh Wolf, I think the biggest mistake of Josh Wolf in 2021, it was the rotation. I mean, sometimes you have two players playing good two games and the next game was a rotation. And that's when you make all the team going nuts. I mean, they don't really know where to go, what to do, because they don't have that continuous like we do back in, you know, south of the border. If you go to Mexico, usually it's the same team that they just put, and Argentina everywhere. You know, even Europe everywhere they use the same team and just try to cover whatever areas they need per game. Right here,
you're saying making maybe a change or two, not making a lot of changes game to game.
Exactly, because you see, when we won here on Q2, we beat LAFC. I'm sorry, LA Galaxy. It was like a real good game, real good game. But the following game, we had seven changes on the lineup on the initial 11. That's crazy. I mean, it's really crazy.
Was the next game 7 days away, or was it three?
No. It wasn't Wednesday. But either way, you can't make seven changes. I mean, it's like, okay, they're gonna play Sunday, Wednesday, and Saturday. But Glenn, If you go Europe, they play every 3-4 days. If you go south of Argentina, Brazil, they play Libertadores, they play every 3 games. Even if you go to CONCACAF, they play the CONCACAF League every 3 days. I mean, it's like they're professional players. I mean, it's no reason why you have to change 7 players from one game to another. That's what we always question Wolf. I say, you know, why you do that? And his answer, whatever he thinks, I really don't think they make sense. But you know, that's the way he's been doing it. He did it like 2-3 times. We won a game here against Portland, and then the next game we had 7 changes and 7 substitutions on Dallas, and we lost. So if he was learning of his first coaching year, that's fine. I mean, we're ready. It's over. Let's start the new one, and let's start thinking about winning games, because the team, the fans, and everybody needs to have a good team on the city.
I agree with you. Stay optimistic. Year two, it's a coach who's got experience in year one. I think you make good points there. We'll see how the rotation policy works out. We'll see what types of changes. We know that Ethan Finley's coming in. Jared Stroud has been re-signed. Mackenzie Gaines has been drafted by Charlotte FC. Let's see what happens. I guess Maxi Arruti's probably, it sounds like, on his way to Austin FC. I don't know.
That's a thing. I mean, people from South America, they already said, okay, it's done. It's done deal. But Austin FC doesn't say anything. He's not sharing anything. And that's one of the things that we're complaining.
But then maybe it's not a done deal. If Austin FC is not saying anything, then they're probably still working on the contract.
But if they come here 3 days later and they say, okay, you know, Rudy, it's our game, it's our player, why didn't he say, you know, we're in conversation with him or something? Because everybody, as I'm saying, in Argentina, in Houston, Victor Araiza was saying, okay, it's done. I think you also mentioned it. I mean, it seems like
I didn't say it was done. I just said that it sounds like it's moving to that direction, but that's not real. That's really non-committal. I mean, look, there's a lot of rumor. There's a lot of innuendo. MLS is done a little bit differently than it is in other countries. I don't think there's any question. Sometimes we have to adapt a little bit and work with, you know, the organizations in the way that they do it. But I like your style. I do believe we've got to have real healthy pressure, real questions. Everybody's got to act like adults in the room. And this is going to be for the betterment for the fans, and it's better coverage. I don't want to get a press release just regurgitated by 18 different guys in a market. That's not covering the team to me.
Exactly. And now let me go back a little bit. We're talking about what we're expecting on 2022. We know Josh Wolf, Wolf's son, Owen, it's on the roster. And I was asking, you know, colleagues, I didn't ask you, but I said, you know, do you think Owen Wolf will make his debut in 2021 in another team on the MLS? Without it. I mean, his dad is here. He's going to make it now. I mean, he did it already. Now, we signed, or they already made the official, Ethan Finley. It's a guy who didn't play any game in 2021 because knee injury. But he was one of Josh's players when he was coaching on Columbus. So he's not a very good player, at least on Wikipedia. Because I tried to, search his career. He's okay. I mean, he's a winger. He seems like he's okay. But why? I don't understand why it has to be the same triangle. Berhalter, Wolf, and a player. I mean, somebody who was...
But isn't that natural? I mean, that happens in other countries too. You go with people you're familiar with, you trust, you know, maybe over somebody of equal caliber. I mean, that's part of it. I don't think that's out of bounds. I think that happens in the business world, and I think that happens in Major League Soccer too. People go with trusted individuals and people that they're familiar with. Now, they're going to have to go to their grave with that if they don't produce and they don't perform. So I'm okay with that, to be honest with you, Jorge.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with the presentation is like, okay, you know, he's one more player. He's somebody who's going to be on the team But it's nothing to celebrate or say, you know what, we're going to have a good guy over here, or this is the signing of the year or something that that some people, you know, like supporting groups and everything, oh, yeah, we have this guy. I mean, really, he played 14 games in 2 years. Let's see what happens. I mean, let's see what happens. But we can't expect this guy to fix all the problems we had in 2021.
Well, it'll have to change, and I don't think there's any question the organization is want to get better on the competitive side. You've got an incredible fan base. It's a real happening. You said you couldn't believe that it's ever happened in Austin. Jorge, thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. We appreciate it very much.
Glenn, I thank you very much for the invitation.
All right, that's Jorge. You follow... covers Austin FC. That's Jorge Iturralde, and we appreciate him coming on tonight. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, more to come. Hugh O'Connor's Pub, don't forget it, out on I-10 in the Marquee Entertainment Center, home of the Liverpool Supporters Club. All kinds of great fish and chips out there, craft beer. Get a good Guinness out there. We've done some live radio shows out there. It's Hugh O'Connor's Pub.
Christmas. Merry Christmas and happy holidays from ESPN 97.5. Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We roll on again. No one can thank enough John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they get the show on the air. They've done it for year after year after year. They also are the presenting sponsor of our show in Austin, Soccer Matters, in that market as well. So a big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. They're bilingual, 713-322-HURT. You call them, you get in any type of accident, they will take your case 24-7. All right, our next guest has ties to the Houston soccer community. Having played youth soccer on fields all over Houston with Cyfair Dynamos, the Hurricane Soccer Club, he went on to play at the University of Connecticut along with four other Houston area players. They won the national championship in 2000. He was a number one draft choice in Major League Soccer. He was the Herman Award winner, which for those who don't know what that is equivalent to the Heisman Trophy in soccer. Played for the Dallas Burn, FC Dallas, played in Norway. And recently in the news, being named the head coach of the University of Connecticut, where he helped lead them to a national championship. He joins us now from the beautiful island of St. Thomas in the U.S. Virgin Islands. He's Chris Bondi. Chris, thank you very much for coming on the show, making a little time for us on vacation.
No, anytime, Glenn, anytime. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, the first thing you said to me is, well, my wife has given me a little time here so I can do a little work because getting the new job, you're right into it, huh?
Yeah, I know you're right into it. It's just one of those things where we had this vacation planned for close to a year and a half. Imagine me telling her, no, you know, I can't make this trip now with the kids all excited. So yeah, we're able to do it. Luckily, you know, I have an understanding wife knowing I'm a coach. So she said, hey, you know what, take the first couple hours in the morning, do what you have to do. And then it's all about family after that, which I love. And obviously the reason we're here anyways, to spend time together.
So before I get into, you know, this amazing appointment at a place you won a national championship, the University of Connecticut, I just want to talk about that because, you know, you've had to bounce around in your career as a coach, you know, Holy Cross, Northeastern. You have stayed kind of on the East Coast, Dartmouth. You've put in the time, but it's not easy on a young family, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. I think one of those things when you're done playing, I think there's two ways to go. And I always tell people, right, if you go the pro route, which is probably more more crazy, I think you would say, in terms of the, you know, the way the hiring goes and you know, lose 3 or 4 games, you could be out of a job. I think for me, it made sense of the college route, right? Being able to work with student athletes and teach them and, you know, kind of have an impact on their life, kind of similar to what Coach Reed did to me, right? And all the guys from Houston with Garrett and Eddie and Ryan and Sam Forco, you know, I think he did a good job in working with us. And I think for me, coming to college route was important, but also I knew the first couple of years just trying to, you you know, build my resume, get an understanding of the college game is going to be a little bit difficult in the family. But, you know, luckily, like I said, I have understanding wife and the family love going to different places and learning different things. So it's all worked out quite well.
Chris, was there ever any doubt that you were going to remain in the sport of soccer?
I don't know if there was ever a doubt, right? Because I think you're passionate about it. You've done it your whole life. And I'm similar to that, right? Is, you know, I can't imagine waking up in the morning and not thinking about the game, right? So I love the game. I enjoy teaching the game. And I just want to be around it somehow, right? You know, and I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I can tell you formations. I can tell you tactics and I can tell you, hey, how to develop players. So I think for me, once you have those things that aligned with what you believe, then I think ultimately this is your passion and, you know, you might as well go after it.
Chris Bondi joining us, named the new head coach of the University of Connecticut. We're going to get to that in a second. You know, let me go back to that because I know you have a lot of gratitude for the game and the way you've gotten to where you are now in your coaching career, which, by the way, is separate from a playing career, right? I mean, this is a second, career in your life and a very influential one at that. The gratitude you have for the game and the things that got you to where you are, there is a sense of humility that I know that you carry.
Well, I think it has to, right? You have to, because I think if I was to say, hey, you know, I did it on my own, I'd be lying to you, right? I think for my dad pushing me every single day, from Olivia Venadori, from yourself, from Tony Johnson, there's just so many different names that have helped me get to where I'm at today, right? And I think for me, it's also important to understand when I go out there and coach, when I go out there, when I was playing for UConn, I wasn't just representing myself, but I was representing all those people that helped me get there. And it's upon me to make sure that, in a way, I make you guys proud because, you know, you put so much time and effort into developing me as a young man and develop me as a person. So I want to do the same thing to other young men that I'm, you know, I'm fortunate enough to coach.
When you were growing up in Houston with all the players going into Major League Soccer, and there were guys before you, the Ahmad Babas and the Johnny Torreses, and we can go on with a lot of names here and forgive me for forgetting some of them, but we have a long list. There was, I felt when I was coaching youth soccer, that there was a real sense of Houston soccer pride. Did you get that when you were growing up?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. I think the biggest thing we always try to do in Houston was compete against Dallas, right? Just kind of have that rivalry, the I-45 rivalry. You know, it's like every time we get together with the Texans or another team from Dallas, is like to showcase Houston soccer, right? Because I think back then, even though those guys were going into the league, there's always like a, you know, Houston is just okay kind of thing. And I think we wanted to prove that wrong. And I think we did a decent job of that. And I think the next phase now is to get Houston soccer back on the map because there's so many quality players there. It's just a matter of getting them an opportunity to showcase themselves, which hopefully with myself being a head coach and some other guys growing up in Houston, like Johnny over at Creighton, we can start to see that, you know, moving forward again, like it back in the day.
Well said. Chris Bondi joining us, named the new head coach of UConn. Okay, so you take over a program that the man you're taking over the job from is a legendary college soccer coach. He recruited you relentlessly, and I can attest to that. Rest assured, I had a few lunches in Houston with Ray Reed, and I got a bunch of Christmas cards from the UConn athletic department pretty repeatedly. Yeah. I think I still have those, actually.
That's funny.
But, you know, tell me about when this came down, how you got the job, how you learned of it, and then take us into what an unbelievable opportunity this is for you.
Yeah, no, I think anytime you're replacing a legend like Ray Reed, right, you know you're in for a tough cooking kind of. Yeah, he's been around for so long. He's established himself within the game. And I think for me is making sure, and I think that's what was important for me in my early stages of my career, to go and kind of establish myself and learn what I was good at, things I needed to work on, because anytime you're taking over a legend, it's important to have yourself established in terms of how you are as a coach. So I think I have a good understanding of that. But in saying that, you know, anytime you're taking over a guy that's been there for 25 years and everybody knows Ray Reed as UConn soccer, right? And I think for me, it's just making sure that I come in and try to be myself and do what I have to do to kind of, you know, keep the program in a positive light. So yeah, we have our work cut out for us. You know, there's a lot of good, obviously, teams in the Big East, and we understand it's going to be a tough conference every single year. But I do have faith in my ability to recruit and to develop players. And I think if we have certain guys that believe in what we're trying to do here, which I think we will, I think we'll be successful in the long run.
Chris, how would you describe yourself as a coach now that you've developed? You know, you've been in this a while now. You're a veteran. You've put the time in, you've put the work in, you've had all these experiences in life, you've been coached by a ton of different people. When you put it all together, what type of a coach is Chris Bondi?
Yeah, no, I think the key word I always like to use and I use with my players, I think I'm a work in progress, right? And I think as a good coach, you're always working and developing on your philosophy and your mentality in terms of how you want to see things. I think what I've figured out that I'm more of an up-tempo type of coach, right? Because I think you got the Barcelona of the worlds, you got the Man City of the worlds, and I think I'm more of the Liverpool of the world where, you know, fast pace, high intensity, let's go after it, let's set the pace. And I think that's something you learn as you go through. And the more I'm involved with players and the more I'm teaching and developing them, I think that's kind of where I side on in terms of being a coach to say, hey, you know what? There's no, especially a place like Northeastern, right? A lot of times there's almost that mentality to say, okay, you know, we're going to sit back and take it. And I think for me, kind of switch in and say, hey, no, we're going to push the game. We're going to go after them. We're going to press teams. And I think we'll be able to do similar things at UConn.
Chris Bondi joining us, now named the head coach of the University of Connecticut, was at Northeastern since 2016. That's quite a long time you were there. I mean, that's got to be tough leaving there as well.
No, it's tough, right? Because you have a lot of those student athletes that, you know, came along and helped us rebuild the place, right? Because we took over, it was a difficult place, right? I think obviously every program that you take over as a young coach, it becomes a bit difficult, right? To come in and establish yourself. And so much of those players, you know, believed in us and gave us an opportunity to work with them and helped us build what we think Northeastern soccer is going to be in the next couple of years, which is possibly an NCAA team and even the Sweet 16 team, right? Because the amount of talent we have on that group. So, yeah, I think 6 years. But then if you look at the 6 years, it wasn't all rosy, right? I took my lumps. You know, I got beat up. I like to say I got beat up, you know, early stages of my career. But I think that prepared me now for what I'm about to face, right? Because it wasn't, hey, you know what? I just won all the time. So if I go through some difficult times at UConn, I wouldn't know how to handle it. I know how it feels like to stand in front of the group, you know, after a tough loss and tell them, hey, you know what? Still believe we're going to be in the right frame of mind. We'll figure things out. And I also know what it feels like to celebrate a big victory. So I think all those things will help me as I take, you know, the next step of my career, which is getting to UConn.
All right. You won a national title in 2000 with four of your teammates here from Houston. How has the college game changed to you now that here we are in 2021 heading into 2022?
Yeah, I think there's more parity, right? I think back then, maybe scholarship limits, maybe, you know, the soccer scene wasn't as big, and you know, obviously you didn't have the MLS. You didn't have, you know, the European influx that we have now. So it was more balance. And I know the 2000 guys, especially guys from Houston, don't want to hear that because they thought, you know, we were obviously the best team ever to play the game. But yeah, I think the game is more balanced now. There's more teams that are challenging for championships. And I think that's a big part of it. But then also, if you look at, you know, back then, if you're a young American player, you're going to college, right? So you had all the top American players playing in college, whereas now you have some of those guys going overseas and even obviously going straight to the MLS. So that's changed quite a bit. And then on the reverse side of that, you have a lot of young, talented European players seeing the value of the education and now are coming to the U.S. So I think now it opens up for a lot of teams that maybe don't have the quote-unquote the big names in the Power Fives to then get, you know, an influx of Europeans and then start to make a name for themselves like you saw with Marshall and some other guys the last couple of years.
Chris Bondi joining us here again, named the head coach at the University of Connecticut. So I'm gonna put this one out here right now. I'm expecting you to be recruiting Houston athletes to bring them to the Northeast. So is Houston, you know, with your knowledge of it and knowing the club system down here and the talent that comes out of here, I assume you're going to do some recruiting here.
Oh, of course. I'll be crazy not to, right? I think there's so many talented players down there. I think my staff and I, when we get assembled, is to, you know, start calling some of the club coach down there. He's like, you know, who do you have that we can kind of take a look at? So, yeah, I actually have two players from Houston on my Northeastern team, you know. So those guys are obviously guys that we recruited and scouted. And for me, you know, coming to Houston and getting quality players out of there is an important piece of what we're going to try to do it at UConn. So, yeah, we'll be on the phone calling right away to get some of those guys up in the Northeast.
Do you feel pressure? You know, because look, you're replacing a legend. This is a legendary college program going back to when I was a kid and Joe Maroney was the head coach. I mean, everybody knew the University of Connecticut. It's an incredible program. You have an indelible part of its history, having led it to a national championship. How do you keep that all sort of under control? You got, I believe, a brand new stadium or a stadium being built now, the marketing, you've got all these friends of the UConn soccer program. You've got a tremendous alumni support. Yeah. How do you feel about all that?
Yeah, no, I think pressure is part of the job, right? I think pressure is ultimately part of the job. And I think you welcome that pressure, right? Because if you're in an environment where there's no pressure, then I think in a way you might, you know, slack off or think, hey, you know what, I'm doing everything I need to do, right? I think you get to UConn and you get to a Final Four, if I'm fortunate enough to do it within the next 3 or 4 years, and we don't win a national championship, the first guys I'm getting calls from are the alums saying, hey, you know, why didn't you win the national championship? So, yeah, no, I think pressure is something that I think we all live for and want in this job. And I think ultimately for me is understanding that I am part of the alumni base as well, right? So I'm putting pressure myself to be successful, because if I'm not, I'm sure the first guys that call me up would be Garrett, hey, you need to get out of the seat, you know, or Eddie, get out of the seat, or Sam. Oh,
Garrett will definitely, Garrett Grinsfelder or Jeff
would definitely tell me, right? And all these guys. So yeah, the pressure is there, but I think it's something we all welcome in our profession, right? So I'm looking forward to it. And I think obviously I've like I said, my, you know, background in terms of going through the paces from Holy Cross to Dartmouth to Northeastern will ultimately help me deal with the pressure of UConn.
Well, you've 100% did the work. Congratulations. It's an amazing, great opportunity. I'm really looking forward to watching you from the coaching position at UConn, Chris. Now, before I let you go, you're in the U.S. Virgin Islands. It's one of the most beautiful places going, as we know. I've got family down there, so I want to know what you think of the islands so far.
No, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. The water, I'm looking right now. If I look to my left, the water, you know, I can see all the way down to the bottom. So it's been great just being out here with the family, you know, and spending some time together. Because I think they know once I go back into the, you know, into the U.S., everything changes, right, in terms of just getting the ground running and trying to get our staff together, trying to get, obviously, get on the recruiting trail. So, it's been unbelievable just down here with them and spending this time together.
Yeah, you told me you were at Megan's Bay, which is one of the most beautiful bays in the world. And there's many of them, but it's right. A beautiful spot. And you told me your kids really like that beach. Is great because, the white sand, it's just remarkable.
Yeah, the kids didn't want to leave, right? We had to tell them, hey, it was like around, you know, 6 o'clock. It was like, oh, we got to go. They didn't want to leave. But I think we're going to try to even go back there, I think, tomorrow again, because they just loved it so much. So, but it was pretty cool.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the program. I'm sure a lot of people from Houston will have enjoyed this interview with you. Best of luck at Connecticut. Everybody's still following you and supporting you down here. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
No, I appreciate it, Glenn. Thank you so much for having me. And everybody in Houston, you know, I obviously, bottom of my heart, I really appreciate all the support.
All right. That's Chris Bondi, played youth soccer here in Houston. And the beauty of this is he goes to UConn, and there's so many guys that will be able to say, hey, you know, we played against Bondi when we were a kid and all that great stuff. So we really appreciate him coming on and looking forward to watching him continue progressing in his career at the University of Connecticut now, not as a player, but as a head coach. All right. We'll take a break. We got more to come here on Soccer Matters. Gonna be a long hot summer.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here. Final segment of the night here, and we're going out in a big style here in 2021. Again, big, big happy holidays to everybody out there. Enjoy yourselves over the break. All right, our next guest, University of Connecticut head coach at Connecticut, 318, 139, and 65. 8 regular season Big East titles, 4 conference championships, 18 times took the team to the NCAA tournament, won a national championship in 2000, 25 years at the legendary UConn program, also won 3 titles in Division II at Southern Connecticut State nationally, 457 career wins, 4-time was the National Coach of the Year, and there is a Houston connection here, which we will get into in a minute. He is Ray Reed. He joins us now. Ray, thank you so much for coming on the program.
My pleasure, Glenn. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, I could have kept going on with all the accolades. I guess the first thing I want to say to you right now is from a personal standpoint, congratulations on a remarkable career mentoring student athletes, developing this program at UConn, which is obvious, one of the best in the country. Where are you now emotionally, and how did you come to this decision?
Yeah, Glenn, doing it a long time and do it kind of the way I want to do it. And that was all in. You know, my parents are getting older. You know, their health is starting to decline. I need to be available for them a little bit more. Running the program at UConn the way I wanted to, I probably could not do both. I knew I had a good guy in Chris Bondi in the wings. So I figured it was time to step away and try to help my parents and see what my next project will be.
Ray, I would assume there's a tremendous amount of opportunity that's available to you out there. I mean, the college game needs you. The sport of soccer needs you in this country. So my gut doesn't tell me that you're stepping away clean and are not going to be involved in soccer.
Your gut's probably correct. I've been very fortunate. You know, I'm looking at a couple of different opportunities where, you know, it'll be a full-time situation. I don't have to work hard, but I will not have to, you know, put in the 70, 80 hours, 50 weeks a year that I did at UConn. I hope to stay involved in the game, and I would imagine in the next 30 days I'll figure that out.
Ray Reed joining us, the legendary coach at the University of Connecticut. 2001, the national championship. And here's where the Houston tie comes in. And we're a city that does not do a good enough job of reflecting on our great soccer culture here. We've placed tons of players in Major League Soccer, colleges and universities around the country. You tapped into five guys led by Chris Bondi, who is now going to be the next coach. With those five players from Houston, you won a national championship. And I want to make sure people understand that you had a bit of a pipeline here and you brought in some Houston area players to the cold of Storrs, Connecticut, and in 2001, a national championship. At that time, you know, obviously Chris Bondi brought you to Houston, but, you know, you were recruiting in different areas of the country.
Yeah, we were very fortunate. You know, George Kiefer, my assistant, watched the Houston Hurricanes play in the old Orange Bowl, I think it was called, whatever the tournament was in Tampa at Christmas time before Disney had their thing. And what you forget to tell them is the club was ran by Glenn Davis and Tony Johnson. And we became good friends with both Glenn and Tony. And obviously we wanted Chris Bondi, but we loved Sammy Forco. We loved Eddie Rivera. We loved Ryan Brown. And we loved Garrick Rinsfelter. So we were very fortunate. And we tried to get Fabian Arboleda and Chad Riley a few years later, but we couldn't get either one of them. But Houston was very good to us, very good to the University of Connecticut. And thanks to Glenn and Tony for a fantastic job they did with the Hurricanes, which are now the Albions, and producing such high-level players.
Well, those were great times. I do remember one thing. You were absolutely relentless on Chris Bondi. You were relentless recruiting. And you know, I want you to position that for people that are listening to this show, recruiting, how important that is in the college game. And you yourself were coming down here as well as George Kiefer.
Yeah, the recruiting is the whole, unfortunately, recruiting 70% of it and coaching 30% of it. But the recruiting is the whole game, and you can get a good idea now with free agency in the NBA or Major League Baseball, how the general manager, the owner, the coach, the manager are involved recruiting these guys because these players turn the team. Well, it's the same way in college athletics. And we were very fortunate. You know, we knew Chris had potential. Not going to lie to you, did not think he would do what he wound up doing, but we knew he was a great player, and we loved Eddie, and like I said, Garrett, Brownie, and Sammy. So we were very active down there. We became good friends with the Bondi family, and you know, very thankful to Houston.
Ray Reed joining us here. You know, let's talk about your greatest strength as a coach, because I love to talk to guys like you that have been so successful and kind of try to get into their brain. What was your greatest strength in your mind as a coach?
You know, I think people have told me this, Bill. I think with players and my staff, getting players and coaches to do things they couldn't think they'd do. Kevin Baca had left to go run the Oakwood Club. He was with me 10 years. And we were trying to hire Mike Miller, who was my associate head coach for the last 5 years. And Mike called Kevin to get a scout on me. And Kevin said, look, there's going to be times you hate the guy, but he gets the most out of everybody around him, whether you like it or not. So hopefully I get the most out of players and coaches.
Tactical acumen, recruiting, you already told us 70% of it's recruiting. Now that other 30%, is that tactical acumen, player management, the building of the culture, the program? I mean, so much goes into it.
Everything. It's all tied in together. And the recruiting is 70%, but But the building of the program and the motor, it's all tied in together. I think it's everything. Look, when we were looking for a head coach when I retired, I said to the AD at UConn, because of the way we do things, he's got to be 50% coach and recruiter, 50% general manager, fundraiser, director, player, personnel. And I think if you're going to have a very successful big program that touches a lot of people, you got to find a person with that skill set, hence Chris Bondi.
All right, so Chris Bondi is going to step into the new role. And before we talk about him, I want to talk to you about when you stepped in for the legendary Joe Maroney. I mean, it's almost like a full circle coming here, because Joe Maroney at the time, if I remember correctly, I think he was probably the most innovative guy when it came to creating fundraising, the marketing of a men's soccer program in the college game, back at a time where a lot of people didn't do that, right? So how much pressure was on you when you took over for Joe Maroney?
Well, there was a lot of internal pressure, because I had known what UConn was like when I was a high school player and a college player at Southern Connecticut. And, you know, he was getting 9,000-10,000, no lights on a Sunday afternoon. And he was UConn basketball before the men or women were UConn basketball. He was UConn basketball. So we knew it was a lot of internal pressure. And to be honest, on a different level, I had replaced my college coach, Coach DeCranian at Southern Connecticut, who was an icon of the sport. And it was a similar type of pressure, you know, internal pressure. So, yeah, there was a lot of pressure both times, that you want to leave the place better than you found it, and you want to make sure you don't let people down.
Yeah, that was the legendary Bob DeCranian at Southern Connecticut. So you can look both these coaches up, Joe Maroney. All right, you had an assistant. You had a right-hand man, John Dealey, 30 years. That's a lot of years. I'm thinking of Brian Clough here and Peter Taylor, you know, from the days of Nottingham Forest or Derby County now. Tell me about that and how important and special that relationship was.
You know, John was a year older than me. We played against each other in high school. Basically, I went to Southern Connecticut because I wanted to play with him and play for Coach DeBranian. Played with him 2 years. I became coach's assistant, and John went to work for a while. I got hired in 89 as the head coach, and I brought him back, and he was with me till 2019, my closest friend, one of the most underrated coaches in the country, a brilliant tactician, not a great recruiter, a brilliant tactician, great with players, great with developing culture, a real winner, and we don't have one-tenth of the success we had if not for him.
Ray Reed joining us, the legendary coach at UConn, 2000, the national champions. All right, there's that legendary picture, you and Chris Bondi with your arms around each other. No one would have said at that time this would be going on. No one could have predicted that Chris Bondi would have gotten into coaching, now going to be coaching UConn. What did that day mean to you, and how often do you reflect on it? Because to win a national championship is not something everybody does, obviously.
Yeah, you know what? I reflect on it a lot. It was a special group of guys. We had some very good teams since then, and we could not get it done. You know, we had some very good teams and we could not get it done. Reflect on it a lot. It changed my life professionally, personally. You know, I told the guys kind of going to the Final Four because of what we had done in Southern Connecticut. I said, guys, you win this, this ties you together for life. 30 years from now, you'll be talking to each other at functions, hanging out, tied together closer than anybody I've been with. And these guys, the 2000 team, are like brothers. So I reflect on it a lot. And, you know, Chris was a great, is and was a great leader. You had Max Zeke, you had Brent Raheem, you had Brian Hancock, you had Darren Lewis, Eddie Rivera, Cesar Cuella, Will Thornton, Roberto Vargas, Sammy Forco. Just a great group of guys. As a matter of fact, I said to Chris the other day, you know, they kind of did a thing on Thursday at midfield where we hugged, and I, with the AD's permission, I offered Chris the job. And I hugged him, and when I done offering him, I said, just so you know, the last three coaches won the national championship. No pressure, Chris. I'm laughing.
Well, it is a pressure-filled job, and it's a big program. And the interview prior with Chris, we did speak about that. All right, the qualities of Chris. Obviously, he's a leader. He's done his time. Holy Cross, Dartmouth, Northeastern. He's really put in the work as a coach. What are some of the things you see from your position about Chris Bondi when it comes to being a head coach now at UConn?
Yeah, he's a leader. I say this, one of the quotes I gave, winning is in his DNA. He doesn't suffer any fools. He's good with players. He's a good teacher. I think he walks in the locker room, and forget his coaching ability, walks in the locker room day one with respect from the players just from his playing ability, never mind his coaching ability. Then you add the coaching ability on top of it. I think he'll put together a very good staff. He's the right guy at the right time.
Ray, if we take a big overview of the college game, what to you has changed the most over the years? You know, outside of the quality of players, I get that. But what do you see now that maybe you didn't see 15 years ago?
There's more money in it at a variety of levels. More money, and schools are making more commitments to it. Facilities are getting better. It's heading in the right direction. You know, not as many of the top Americans are going. Obviously, they're signing with the MLS or Europe at the age of 15, 16. But you still have a good product there. I just think the universities and the leagues are making major commitments to men and women's soccer financially.
In the future, where does it remain in the sports landscape? Because it seems such a big part of the American game.
Soccer in general?
Yes. College soccer.
I think you're going to see the MLS. Look, you're not going to catch the NFL. You're not going to catch college football. You're not going to catch the NBA. You're not going to catch college basketball, I think. But I think it can be right up there with baseball and hockey, which is, you know, baseball and hockey's numbers are good. You got a lot of viewers. You know, people and I like baseball. People complain about the pace of baseball, or pace of soccer. Certainly the pace of baseball is slow. People complain, oh, it was a boring game. It was 0-0, 1-0. Well, how many great NHL games or playoff games are 1-0? Or how many times does the 8 seed in the NHL playoffs beat the 1 seed 4-0 because the goalie stands on his head 4 straight games? So hockey and soccer have some similar characteristics. So I think you're going to see it, Ken. I don't think it'll pass the 2 footballs and 2 basketballs, but I think it's going to be up there after that.
Ray, is there anything you desire to do now after this outstanding career? Because like I said before earlier in this interview, you have a lot to give with your experiences and your knowledge and your intuition. What does the future maybe hold for you? I mean, have you even thought about that?
Yeah, you know, the University of Connecticut approached me about staying on, you know, I retired, but coming back as a full-time employee and helping raise money possibly for the 2 soccers, which if Chris wants that, that's something I would strongly consider as long as he's comfortable with that. There's also a piece of me, I've kind of, you know, watched you over the years and think you do a great job for the ACC or the Big Ten or the Big East. I wouldn't mind getting into TV or radio as a color guy for college games. I think I could bring a different perspective after being in there for 35 years. And I would never rule out coaching. Again, I'm not going to, if the jobs are open, so let me make that career correct. I'm not going to go after the Rutgers or Maryland or Indiana job, but a smaller job where I can coach, I can give the time to my parents and also be able to do what I want to do. I would not rule that out either.
Ray, thank you for visiting with us. This is how we cap out 2021 with your interview. My best of luck to you with your parents. I know that's big to you right now. Outstanding career, legendary career in the college game. And we thank you very much for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you, Glenn, for the opportunity. Happy New Year to you and your family.
All right. That's the legendary Ray Reed. 2000 UConn, led by Ray Reed, won the national championship. And that's just one of the things amongst many he did mentoring student athletes at an amazing UConn program. All right, that does it for us tonight. As always, a big thank you to Andrew Carlson, our producer who guides the ship throughout the year. All of you who tuned in, our presenting sponsor, John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, Advantage BMW Midtown, Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture, FM Kitchen and Bar, Cactus Music, and of course, Hugh O'Connor's. For all of you, have a safe holiday. We will get back to you after the new year. Good night, everyone.
Christmas, with every Christmas card I write.
It's our gift to you.
Wow, guess what I've always wanted?
Sports. ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Save big money on your outdoor project at Menards. Take the guesswork out of landscaping with our free, easy-to-use design program. Plus, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape blocks at the best prices. Get started on your dream landscape now. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com to see our full selection of landscape blocks and get your project started today.